This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by the Human Light Beams over at squarespace.com. Go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. Hello, dear friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. To all the newcomers to the podcast, we welcome you and thank you for taking the rather dramatic step of shoving super advanced speakers into the sweet sanctity of your waxy ear holes and allowing my raspy lesbian voice to go trickling down into your brain cave. Welcome, and for those of you who have been listening for some time, why not send a sweet blast of rainbow-colored love through the etheric medium that surrounds all beings so that all these new listeners can feel a splash of relief, a moment where the sorrow, suffering, bitterness, annoyance, and anger of human incarnation dissipates just for a second. Let them feel that sweet love spray as it drenches their heart chakra. Welcome! I know the new listeners, you may be in a place at this moment of judging me, and I don't blame you. My voice sounds like a raspy lesbian chain-smoking trucker, and who the hell do I think I am for having a podcast? But you gotta watch out for that judgment brain, friends, because when that judgment brain sets in, everything gets weird. And with that, I welcome the North County Double Dippin' Sweet Country Trawlers to sing a little bit about that old judgment brain.
Oh my Lord, oh my Lord, oh that judgment brain will get you every time, oh my Lord. 'Cause your brain is full of demons and they're spraying judgment semen right onto the keyhole in heaven's door. When that demon semen sprays, it impregnates your days, and everything turns into a chore. Your day gives birth to sorrow, and you're hoping for tomorrow, but tomorrow you will only judge some more. So stop drinking demon cum, and have a little fun. Imagine that you know nothing at all. The world's a mystery, and there is no history, just the earth, the sky and the sun.
Friends, your heart may look like the broken, blistered bottom of a backwoods prostitute, covered in virulent sores and oozing, spraying out swarms of flies and dropping larvic eggs into the fires of hell. But even if this is the situation that you find yourself, even if your soul has been slammed in the door of life, there is always a balm that you can use to comfort yourself in the terrible lightning storms that come from human incarnation. What is the balm, you may ask? Well, it's very simple. The balm is give more than you think you can. If you want to get in shape, you're not going to get in shape by lifting weights you're comfortable with. And in the same way, if you want to climb out of this maggot-filled Cthulhu multi-winged pit of vile demonic vomit, you're not going to get out of there without exerting a lot of energy. You've got to exert that energy in the right direction, and that direction is in the direction of giving, my sweet children of light. So this weekend and this week coming up, make a commitment to tip a little bit more, to be a little nicer, to pay a little more attention to the boring ear beaters in your life, and do an empirical experiment to see if there is any shift in the horror that you may be feeling because you got shot out of a vagina into time. We've got a great podcast for you. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. You may have been shot out of a vagina into time, but if you ask me, you are shot out of a vagina into the right time. You could have been blasted out of a pussy during the Great Bear Wars of the 1400s, when bears en masse were raiding villages and carrying toddlers down to the rivers, dismembering them and juggling their torsos in front of their horrified parents. But that didn't happen to you. You were born in a time period where you have access to all human information stored on the internet. And not only that, you can imprint the digital medium that we currently call the World Wide Web with your online thumbprint. And that's why you need a website. And that's why you need a great website. And that's why we should all offer our sincere gratitude and thanks to the Velvet Kings and Queens over at Squarespace.com. Squarespace, they create simple, powerful, beautiful websites. They've got 24/7 support via live chat and email. They do not offer telephone support, but why in the name of God would you ever want to call anybody when you could do a nice online chat with them? I've tested it out to make sure it works, and it's fantastic support. They have commerce, which means every website comes with a free online store. Cover pages, this is a feature that allows you to set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. You can start a trial today with no credit card required and start building your website today. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, use offer code Duncan and you're going to get 10% off your first purchase and show your support for the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Sweetie pies, maybe you've got $1 billion. Maybe you're sitting on a glistening pile of gold, or maybe somewhere in some safe in your mansion in Bavaria, you've got a stack of blood diamonds that you can use to pay your super advanced former CIA employee web designer to build your incredible Roswell level UFO style website. But not all of us are in the Illuminati, you reptilian scumbag. And so we don't have the money to pay for a web designer. And really good web designers are supremely expensive. Everybody else more than likely is using their very mild ability to cut and paste code to hypnotize you, to draw you into their terrible spider web of mediocrity, and to humiliate you by shoving your crappy website onto the internet for all the world to see. And let me tell you something, guys. This is something I just read on a very respected conspiracy theory forum, but apparently there are these new kinds of assassins who are identifying shitty websites on the internet, finding the people who created the website, and not only killing them, but killing every single person in their family. It's awful. Read about it in Boston. They're walking into bedrooms and the walls are covered in blood, and all that's written in this blood is HTML. That's what's happening, guys, and that's why you don't want an awful website, and your website sucks. Not only are you putting yourself in danger, but you're putting your entire family in danger, and more than likely, you're putting your country in danger. So if you love this country, if you love your family, if you love God, and if you love life, if you love freedom, and if you believe that every single person living today deserves to experience an infinite orgasm that never stops, then you need to go to Squarespace right now and build a website. Besides, you don't have to use a credit card. You can test it out, see if it works. The point is this, and I said it before, I'll say it again. I know someone who makes money selling her socks online. You could do this too. You could create a sock farm. All you need to do is find a bunch of sweaty gals and some treadmills. You could create mass produce sweaty socks and sell them through your beautiful Squarespace website. Move to Bavaria, join the Illuminati, live at the top of a tower, and tell everyone you got there from selling socks. This is the American dream. Go to squarespace.com right now and use offer code Duncan Squarespace. Build it beautiful. You'll get 10% off your website. All right, guys. Squarespace, these guys are my patrons. They are not only do they sponsor many episodes of my podcast, but these wonderful human beings are sponsoring a grand tour, which is coming up at the very end of March. So I hope that you guys will buy some tickets. All the dates are located at DuncanTrussell.com. I'm doing 30 shows. Holy shit. Vancouver, Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, you name it. I'm going all over the East Coast in a bus. It's going to be a blast, and I really hope that you'll come out. Also, this upcoming weekend, if you're listening to this on February 19th, I will be at the Denver Comedy Works Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. That's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The specific dates are the 25th, 26th, and 27th of February. So if you're out there in Denver why not come and see me do some stand-up at one of the greatest clubs in the country, the Denver Comedy Works. Finally, we are also sponsored by Amazon.com. There is an Amazon portal located in the comments section of any of these episodes. That's my poodle barking out there. He probably saw a mole, which is a mole has been ripping up our yard. But that being said, I'll just pause and go kill him. I'm going to go kill him. I'll be right back after I commit poodle-side. One less poodle in the world. Sweet silence has descended upon my house. Go through our Amazon portal, friends. I have just gotten addicted to something that is so fun. Archery. I never thought I would become an archer, but if you want to buy something awesome, go on Amazon.com and buy yourself a recurve bow. Actually, maybe it's better to go to your local sporting goods store and test out some recurve bows, but you could buy a target, you can buy arrows, you could buy a wrist guard. There's a lot of things that go with archery. Listen, I know it sounds crazy. I don't know exactly why I did it, but if you're looking for a way to get outside more, if you want to experience the badassness of having to wear weird archery gear and the sweet thwoop sound as your arrow strikes the target, if you want to experience the kind of amazing lessons that come from archery, it's a deep meditative sport. More importantly, if you want to have just what you need when the power grid fails and you've got to fight against the zombies and kill rabbits, then you should get into archery. Buy a bow, get some arrows, get a target, whatever. The point is, why are you spending your precious life going through traffic to drive to these chain stores and inhale the Zika virus-encrusted mucus of these children who are projectile vomiting their disease onto everything that passes? I saw a kid shove a pair of headphones into his diaper once at a store that I will not name. Think about that. You go to these stores and you test out the headphones, and more than likely you're just filling your ears with baby poop. And who knows where that baby has been? Who knows what that baby has done? Who knows who that baby will become? Go through our portal. It's located at duncantrussell.com. Amazon will give us a small percentage of anything that you buy, and it costs you nothing. It's a great way for you to support the podcast. We also have t-shirts. We have stickers. And thank you to all of you who continue to support this podcast through your donations. I'm very grateful to you, but you don't have to do any of that stuff. All you got to do is listen. And if you like the show, give us a nice rating on iTunes, won't you? All right, pals, we're going to dive right into this episode with today's wonderful guest. Tripoli is a brilliantly funny stand-up comedian. You can find everything out that you need to know about Sam by going to samtripoli.com. If he's ever in your area, definitely go see him perform. And, oh God, I hate it when that happens. Burped, sorry. People knew about that, but I didn't. Go to Sam's website, follow him on Twitter. All the links you need to get in touch with Sam are going to be at duncantrussell.com. Now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, Sam Tripoli. Sam Tripoli, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Thank you for coming all the way out here.
It's good to be here up on the hill, man. I'm pretty impressed. I'm pretty impressed with your third world dictator, you know, international drug seller, arms dealer house you live in.
Well, yes. And, you know, it can be a little misleading, but we're renting is the thing. You know, renting, I want to buy the house.
Yes.
But I can't afford it. If you want to buy a house these days in Los Angeles.
And this is our Kickstarter podcast where we get
guys,
people.
Guys, help me buy a house.
Help me buy a house. You have to see this house.
Do you own a house?
No, I don't. I live in a nice little, I live in like a studio house by the Hollywood. I basically live in the exact opposite of you in terms of I live in a nice studio house next to the Hollywood Bowl. Whereas you live way out. I live right in the middle of congestion and chaos, but I love where I live.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. The thing is, man, the older I get, when I was younger, I used to roll my eyes at the concept of owning a home.
Yeah.
Because I would think to myself, you're in debt to the banks. Do you really think the economy is going to stay stable long enough for you to pay that fucking debt off?
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind? And then when you start owning shit, you suddenly put yourself in all kinds of danger, right? I mean, this is like, have you ever read Walden by Thoreau?
No, I have not.
So he talks about how, you know, this is like the ultimate book of being self-sufficient. He like builds his own fucking place out in the middle of nowhere, little cabin, goes fishing, grows his own food. And the book is just sort of this essay on the insanity of modern life, of having a big mortgage payment, being trapped by the banks. He said it would be better for a man to tie his house around his neck and drag it down the road, because that's what you're seeing anytime you see somebody who is in debt and owns a house. Yeah. That's not a free man anymore.
No, he's a slave to the payments.
Yeah, he's a slave to the banks. He is he's put himself. Now, the rationalization is you're investing. Right now, every time I pay the fucking mortgage on this place or the rent, I'm paying someone else's mortgage.
100%.
So I'm hemorrhaging money into the atmosphere.
Right.
So the
They all say that that's done on purpose, though. That's kind of to get everybody so they got to play by the rules. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I've always heard that theory that, you know, getting married and doing all that thing is a lot to do with, like, making it so you can't take chances as much as in life. And I'm not saying marriage is a horrible... I think if you're in love, you should get married. But there's that whole saying that marriage is all about locking down and almost getting in debt because you got to buy the house, got to get the kids, got to get the car. Now you got to make those payments or all that goes away.
Right.
And then that's the fear that people have. So they kind of play ball or they get kicked out.
Ultimate domestication.
Yeah.
And this is where you get into like the concept of the two sorts of lives in the world. Like you can put them in two categories, the hunter gatherer versus the agrarian,
right?
And so when you're a homeowner and you have kids, then you're living a kind of modern version of the agrarian life, minus growing your own food, which you're probably not doing, but you might be growing it a little bit. But you know, the comedian's life has traditionally been the hunter gatherers.
Yeah.
Life.
Yeah.
Nomadic, wandering. Never rent, never a mortgage, never anything that you trapped.
Eat what you kill. That's all you get. You got to eat what you kill.
Yeah. You don't have the security of the, you know for sure how much you're going to make every week. And you have that feeling of the paycheck going into the ATM.
No safety nets, man.
No safety nets.
I was having a discussion with a friend of mine. I have a couple people from my high school graduating class that are pretty big ballers in LA. You know, like they're pretty high up. And, you know, I was having a good discussion.
What do you mean, like actors?
No, like they're on the other side, the production side. Sure. And they're like, they've done pretty well.
Okay.
You know?
Gotcha. And,
you know, one of them was very high up at Disney and he decided to quit. And now he's kind of going off and he's doing, you know, he's producing movies and he's, you know, creating television shows. But it's like he only eats what he kills. Whereas my other friend is like, he's more on the side where he works for a network and he has his weekly paycheck. And he doesn't know if he could go the other way where our friend went, where it's eat what you kill. You know,
right.
It's like if you don't kill, you don't eat.
Right.
Which is comedy, too. Like if you don't book, you don't get paid.
That's right.
There's no like show up weekly and at the end of the week, there's a check. It's like eat what you kill, dude.
Yeah. And there's something really fun about that life.
Yep.
And addictive about that life, but also something incredibly horrifying and terrifying about that life. But who knows which is better? I mean, it's like these are in the Old Testament, you have Cain and Abel, right? And one of them was a hunter and the other one was the agrarian, and one offered meat and the other one offered like crops.
Yeah.
And what was it? One killed the fucking other one.
Yeah.
You know, and was bit damned. You know the story of the mark of Cain? Do you know about this?
I don't know the full story.
So Cain slew Abel, right? And this is the first recorded murder in the biblical mythology. And so, This is where God, this ridiculous Jehovah God, is like asking Cain, where is your brother? And he's like, am I my brother's keeper? I don't know where. He sassed God. He sassed the creator.
Did he say sassy too?
Yeah. Am I my brother's keeper? What do you? I don't know.
Would he say like an Ari Shaffir kind of style?
Well, what am I? Am I my brother's keeper? What? Huh?
I don't know. You're well, God.
It's not my job.
You should be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
Look around.
I thought you knew everything.
Didn't you create everything?
Yeah. I should know what's going on.
Should know?
I don't care.
And kill him? Okay. Whatever. I killed him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So what?
He's been an asshole.
He's been an asshole. I fucking like him.
Yeah. Well, so it's really interesting because for the first case of murder, it isn't the death penalty, but rather Cain gets the mark of Cain, as it's called. And so Cain is sent east of Eden to the land of Nod. And he has a mark. And the mark is that from now on, you will forever and eternally be an outcast. You will always be on the outside. People will reject you. People will push you away. And so in the Old Testament, the descendants of Cain became the musicians and the artists.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so like this is the idea is that this is representative of the artistic spirit.
That is so interesting.
Isn't that cool, man?
That is interesting. That should be the name of my new special, The Mark of Cain.
Descendant of Cain.
Yeah. Because, you know, I'm an outsider for sure.
Always on the fringes.
Always.
Always pushed away. No matter what you try to do,
yeah.
No matter how you try to fit in, they can't let you in. They smell something on you.
It's weird. This is so therapeutic. I didn't realize I had nothing to do with it. This has been foretold.
Therapeutic? You're cursed by God. How's that therapeutic? It's like...
Well, at least now I know it's not my fault.
Well...
You know, the therapy isn't going to change anything because basically God said this is the way it is.
This is the way it is. And to be an outsider is a blessed thing. And it's something that is so wonderful on so many levels and so vital to creating any kind of art, right? Like, how do you make... How are you going to – it's like here is the world, right?
Right.
And you could – like I think about the world as like a bay and with lifeguards. And there's a certain – there's floaties out there, right? And the floaties indicate where you can – where you're supposed to swim and where you're not supposed to swim. And most people stay on one side of the floaties, right?
Right.
But those people who stay on that side of the floaties when they have their bachelor party, a big – event in their life, some kind of celebratory thing, they'll swim outside of those boundaries or they'll pretend they're swimming outside the boundaries. But really, the boundaries just get pushed back by corporations to give you the impression that you're rebelling.
Yeah.
You know, this is Vegas, right?
Yeah.
So you go to Vegas, you get tricked into thinking you're doing some kind of rebellious thing because you're like getting hammered.
That's a great point.
Fucking a prostitute.
Right.
Whatever the ridiculous ritual of blasphemy is that you're doing. But you're not doing anything really outside there. But then there are people who swim way out past those fucking boundaries, man. And those people, if they can come back with the fish that they catch out there, everybody loves the fucking fish, but nobody likes them because they're like, you shouldn't have gone swimming back there.
That's so amazing, dude. That's just the story of like, you can say that about comedy. You can say that about everything, dude. That's really cool, dude.
Isn't it tricky?
That was really amazing, dude. I feel that same thing in comedy. It's like, you know, I love everybody. I mean, I know it sounds stupid, but I do. I love comedy. I love the spectrum of comedy. I love, like, watching different people master different forms of it.
Yeah.
But you definitely see within the group, you know, within, you know, the business, like, people who kind of play the game, let's say, a little more and kind of give the industry what they're looking for, kind of get rewarded more.
Yeah.
And then the people who kind of take chances, you know... Unless they blow up, they get shunned. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It's like there's two ways to be an outsider in comedy. You either blow up huge or you get shunned and, you know, you end up on the fucking outskirts.
Where do you think you are?
Oh, man. This is gut check time. I think I'm teetering. It could either go either way. Like, you know, just I'm being honest with you. It could go either way.
But, you know, you're a brilliantly funny comedian. I've never seen you have a bad set. You crush whenever I've seen you on stage. So it's not as though the results you're getting are, like, failure.
No, not at all.
You're getting incredible results, but you still feel as though...
I'm an outsider.
You're an outsider.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I mean, like, I have some great stuff going on. I don't want to make this the pity party podcast, but it was like, I have great stuff going on, but I definitely see where there's like this kind of, you know, some people just are, you know, this whole, I don't want to make this too much of an insider podcast, but it's like, you just see people fast tracked. You see other people who just got to fight for every like tooth and nail of everything that they get, you know, and it's, It's a weird game that gets played in this town that people don't, because most gigs you do, most jobs you do, it's an A to B to C. You know, you do this, you put in your time, you get moved here, boom, 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 boom. Whereas in comedy or even like entertainment, it's so all over the place.
You know what I use as an antidote to comparison? Like when my mind starts comparing myself to other comedians who are like excelling in the moment. You know what the antidote I use for it is? Robin Williams' feet. And I think about Robin Williams' feet dangling above the floor.
Oh, man.
After he hung himself. And to me, whenever I start like looking at some person in this place or that place, I always think, look, man, this is a temporary situation. And a person's receiving the bounty of the world at that moment in no way means that they are experiencing any level of happiness. Because look at fucking Robin Williams.
I totally agree with
that. One of the great talents. One of the great talents. Like, just incredible. Sure, he was a fucking thief, too, apparently. But God damn it, man.
He was a great entertainer.
He was no one can say that that guy was anything less than a great comedian, man. I didn't particularly like his frenetic style, but shit, man, as a comedian, when you watch that guy improvise and go off and you look at all that natural reservoir
100%.
Of infinite talent, and yet still, this man who had everything at his feet, everything given to him, and worked really hard,
yeah,
he still ended up with a fucking noose around his neck.
You know, it's so interesting, man. A lot of things you're talking about right now, there's a lot of stuff that's discovered in the world of recovery, you know, and a big thing, you know, it's like some people who like, okay, you can only go to this buoy. No, I'm going to go farther. You know, that's classic. Like, you know, I've said this before when I've talked to other addicts, like I could go to Disneyland, right? And they could be like, you can ride every ride you want 1,000 times, but you can't ride that ride.
Right.
That ride right there is the only ride you're never allowed to go on. And I will just focus on the one ride you won't let me get ride on. So what you're also talking about here is, in what my opinion is, the difference between happiness and peace. Okay. Happiness is fleeting. If I poured this and it got over your kick-ass fucking keyboard here,
yeah,
right? Happiness is gone.
Yeah.
But you're at peace. Okay. You know, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
I can go buy a new keyboard.
Sure.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Things don't equal peace. You could buy, if you bought this house right now, because we've talked a lot about you really want to own this house.
Yes.
You would be so happy. But a month in owning this house, on to the next thing.
Yeah, right.
You know, because happiness is fleeting, dude. It's momentary. Being at peace. They actually say you have a certain level of happiness you always go back to. No matter what your wildest dreams are.
Right.
You will always go back to that level of happiness. Great example of that is Powerball winners. They win all this money. You think, you just won $500 million. Your life is set.
Nope.
They all end up fucking broke or dead, dude, because it's just you get back to where you were. No matter what happened. Chris
That's
Farley,
right.
Great example.
You can go through a list of these people who destroyed themselves seeking the wrong kind of food, the wrong kind of water. It's like you have this great thirst. You have this incredible thirst, and everyone's got it. And everyone's trying to quench that thirst in these very sad ways. And what's really, where it gets awful and diabolical, is when you recognize that these massive corporations have identified that a vast majority of the world's population has confused happiness with peace.
Yep.
So knowing that, they're throwing out all these fishing lines that are designed to capture people who've made this initial mistake and who think, okay, if I get this fucking fill in the blank,
yeah,
the car, the new medication, boob job, whatever the fucking thing is. Book the TV role. Get on SNL. There is going to be... It's really sad because if you think about from the perspective of people wandering in the desert, dying of thirst. And as you wander through the desert, you run into these dark warlocks who hypnotize you and tell you, listen, I sense your thirst. That direction there, you will find an oasis filled with water so clear and clean and cold that it will quench your thirst forever. All you have to do is sign this contract and get a loan from the bank for the next 15 years, and your thirst shall be quenched. You're like, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I've been thirsty my entire life. This itching, awful sadness inside of me, I just know that this is going to be the thing.
I got this. It'll all go away.
And so you fucking sign that contract and you get the fucking thing, whatever it may be. And just like you're saying, in 3 months, you're like, I am still thirsty. And that's when the fucking noose starts getting tied for a lot of people, because they think this thirst is an endless, never-ending.
You're always chasing. You're a mouse in you're like a gerbil in the wheel, just running and running. You're always chasing after something else. It's very interesting. You see people do that a lot, what they call geographical. People are like, you know what? This town's, I hate it. I'm going to move to blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be much better. And you get there and you're like, within 3 months, you're like, I'm right back where I was. Because you're not dealing with what's on the inside. You just keep changing the outside.
This is one of my favorite terms that comes from AA, is an asshole gets on the plane in New York, an asshole gets out of the plane in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's great.
It's not going to change. The geography isn't going to change you. But as someone who is addicts who are in recovery, as it's called, recovery, as far as I'm concerned, is a spiritual path. It's a form of spirit. It's a real spirituality. It's a bona fide path. What are some ways that you find peace in the midst of this chaotic career that you have chosen for yourself?
A lot of stuff that I've done is like, just, it's almost cliche-ish. All the cliche stuff so applies to like how I've gotten to a place where it's just like, you know, it's all good. It's all good. A big thing I used to do is judge my insides by other people's outsides. And it's like, oh, look, they got everything. They're set. They're winners and I'm fucking losers. And you're just like, you don't know what's going on in their life. Sometimes, like, I'm not going to get into names, but I see people who I most people would say have it all.
Yeah.
And you look into their eyes and there are storms a-brewing.
Yeah.
Like, there's people out there, very famous people that I won't get into, that if I ever found out they were found in a Motel 6 hanging with their dick in their hand, I would be like, that totally makes sense, you know? Yeah. So I don't judge my insides by other people's outsides.
Right.
The comparison game just, it doesn't work. There's so many different things that go on. I also deal with a gratitude. I try to I make a gratitude list. I try to do it daily. It's not easy, but I try to do it daily.
You write it down?
Yeah. I write down things that I'm thankful for.
When do you do it?
I sometimes I'll do it early in the day when I woke up in the morning. Sometimes I'll do it at the end of the day to kind of go over, you know, within recovery, you're supposed to look back at your day and you go, what did I do? Maybe what did I do was wrong to a couple people and how can I make up with that? And I think that's great. But I also think there's a time where you got to be like, what did I do well? What's going well?
You hit a fucking bullseye on my archery target today.
Yeah. Dude, I could not believe I hit that, dude. It was so good, dude.
Sam, I just compulsively bought a recurve bow and a target and some arrows. And man, I love it. And Sam came over. And, you know, I've been shooting at the target for a few hours, and I've yet to hit a bullseye. And within, like, 6 arrows, and you've never shot before.
I've always had this thing.
From, like, very far away, you zapped a fucking bullseye.
I don't want to get into the bragging thing, but not only did I hit the bullseye, I hit the middle of the bullseye.
I have pictures of it.
Yeah, it's right in the middle. Yeah. It was like, it couldn't get better. That was like, that was super, super fucking experienced archer thing. But I always thought it was really funny. It's like, what if there's something, Duncan, that you are the Michael Jordan of that hasn't been invented yet?
Wow.
Like, if it came around right now and you'd be take to it, like, and you'd be like, I'm the greatest to ever do this.
Wow.
But because it hasn't been invented yet, you'll never know.
Wow, that's super cool. Like juggling multi-dimensional clown penises in VR space.
And you're like, nobody does it better than Duncan. It's flawless the way he does it. But we'll never know if you can juggle interdimensional clown penises because we haven't gotten
there yet.
That's
a sport in the VR. But, you know, this is interesting. What you're talking about is really something I love to think about, because if you look at the concept of what's happening right now with technology and where we're headed, the idea is that we are in an embryonic phase as a civilization right now, and that our true destiny lies in zero gravity, that we are ultimately meant to move away from this planet in the same way when you see little turtles after they hatch in the sand swimming into the ocean. All of us are supposed to swim into space.
And really?
It's not like this is like anything that science has proven. It's something Timothy Leary speculated about, saying that once you hear astronauts talk about the experience of gazing down on planet Earth, and they experience a very specific kind of euphoria, a kind of oneness with the universe where suddenly everything makes sense when you're looking at planet Earth from way, way out in space. Suddenly all the problems that seem so big, all the wars, all the ridiculous divisions, they seem absolutely insane.
Pale blue dot, dude.
There
you
go.
Pale blue dot.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. And so
that's on my website. I put that on there. Like, that's what I believe in. Just like, we are a speck of dust, dude. We are a speck of fucking dust.
That's it.
And we were talking about this last night, and I wanted to do a joke on it about, like, you really want everybody to get along? The only way it's going to happen is when aliens attack. When aliens attack, you don't give a shit. That's a Muslim. That guy's a gangbanger. That dude's gay. You don't give a shit.
Right.
He's got two arms, two legs. He's on our team. Those eight-legged fucking lizard people are the bad people. And that's how everybody's going to get together.
Exactly, man. And hopefully it doesn't take an alien attack. The other idea is everyone witnesses planet Earth from an angle that only a very an infinitesimally small portion of our population has been in zero gravity in space.
What number is that? Even at 100 people?
I don't know. Probably you can. I'm sure you can look it up. I bet it's. I mean, it's got to be under 500, right?
Yeah.
So what immediately starts happening when you see the planet from space is a brand new form of education that you can't get here trapped in the gravity well of planet Earth. So the idea is that once people start getting out of this overpopulated planet, which is we've pushed the pedal to the metal down here, and the thing, yeah, you know, with the engine starting to smoke.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, a lot of people, man, some of my friends have said, no, we don't need to leave planet Earth. We need to focus on working together to fix planet Earth. Well, no. If you want to fix planet Earth, let's get these motherfuckers off of it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So anyway.
Actually, get the rich people off because they're the ones destroying everything.
Or let them stay and go populate. I mean, if you really think about, like, it's a thought experiment. The idea that if suddenly we came up with some brand new way to teleport, some kind of warp drive or a way, and we discovered a habitable planet where, just as a thought experiment, where you could, for very little money, teleport yourself from this planet to a brand new planet that was completely unpopulated, you know, virgin oceans, emerald forests, and started life there. How many people would stay on Earth? How many people would stay on Earth if you could migrate? Which is what happened, you know, a few hundred years ago when people started moving to the West, you know? And people loved it, and it was so exciting. So I think the planet's population would diminish so rapidly if we came up with this way to move. So it's in us. We want to travel. We want to explore. The idea of standing on the soil of another planet, being on another fucking planet, and hearing news from planet Earth?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right. 100%.
Oh, North Korea detonated another bomb on the... Who cares?
We're wanderers.
Yeah.
Men in particular are wanderers. Men love to go explore. Like women, they tend to stay closer to home, whereas men go out and explore. And that's kind of how it goes.
Why do you think that is?
I think it has something to do with, like, Darwinism and mixing up of the genes. And I think women like to stay within a network of family so they can raise the children together, whereas men like to leave because they need to find new genes to mix and match with.
You're also supremely vulnerable when you're pregnant, I guess. It's like you're not going to be able to do a lot of physical.
You need a network.
Yeah, you need to, like, you're in a vulnerable situation. This is actually something, I think it's in Sex at Dawn, something Chris Ryan has told me about. I think Chris Ryan told me this. Sorry if I'm misquoting you, Chris Ryan, if you happen to be listening. But in high school, they study how long kids fall in love in high school, right? And because in high school, there's like a very specific amount of months that people will date and then break up. And it seems like that amount of months, theoretically, is just the perfect amount of time if you are fucking nonstop to get somebody pregnant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the idea is you would.
Oh, that's so interesting.
If you were a hunter-gatherer, you would go hunting with the men, and then you would come back, and some of the men would stay in the wherever the camp was, and they would like mate there for a month or two or however long it is. I can't remember the exact amount of time. And then they would go hunting again. So it's like built into us.
Yeah.
Like, this passionate, fiery, falling in love thing is supposed to last just the right amount of time to get a baby going.
Yeah.
And then you're back out
and
there.
Then you're
hunting
back out
again.
Getting killed off.
Yeah, right.
We're not meant to live this long.
You don't think?
No, I think we were. I mean, obviously we've won kind of with nature. We've won the battle of Earth. We kind of control everything, and you know, and we were like back in the day when we were more living like animals, we would live to what, 35?
Chris 40? Ryan has corrected me on this. He says that is actually a misconception.
Really?
That hunter-gatherers had a limited lifespan, that the limited lifespan started when we settled down and became
farmers.
That's when people started getting fucked up.
It
wasn't from when you were like, apparently indigenous tribes in other parts of the world have like relatively long lifespans compared to what you're talking about, which is like people during the dark ages who are like cooped up in some city where you are having shipments of whatever it is being brought in and with lice or with rather plague fleas. You know what I mean? That you were malnourished, you were sick, you weren't moving around enough. And so that's why there's a fantastic series that they did where they took Aboriginal people, I'm not sure where, what part of the world they're from, to the UK. And they wanted them to live among modern people to see what they thought. And these are people, I think it was like Borneo or something. These are the people who live up in the canopy in Borneo.
Yeah.
So these are people who haven't seen modern life, and they were curious about, well, how are they going to react to this? So like one thing that they did, I'm sorry if I've talked about this before, you guys. One thing that they did is like they passed a homeless person, like someone laying on the street, and they stopped. And they're like, oh, we got to help him. We got to help him. Help him. And they're like, no, 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 no. Keep walking. Keep walking. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about? This is a person.
Yeah.
There's a sick person laying on the ground. If there's a sick person laying on the ground, you help them immediately.
Right, right.
But modern people are like, no, 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 no. When I was driving to the comedy store, I was sprawled out on the sidewalk. It's just a woman just laying there, passed out, and no one's doing anything about it. So modern life says, ignore that person. Ignore, ignore, ignore. Let it die. Let that person die. Not one of us. Let that person die. So the other thing that was interesting was this house they were staying at, the father kept going to work. You know, in the morning, the dude, I guess they had a traditional, like, a traditional family life or whatever, like old school family life where his wife was staying at home to raise the kids, but he would go to work and the Aboriginal people were like, where are you going every day? And he's like, I got to go to work. And they're like, why do you have to leave the house to go to work? And he's like, well, I've got to pay for the house. And they're like, how long do you have to go leave the house to pay for the house so you can live in the house?
Right.
And he's like, well, 30 years. And they're like, wait, are you telling us that you have managed to get yourself in a predicament where you are in a house, but you can't live in the house because you have to go somewhere else to pay for the house and you can't be around your family? And to them, that was the most absurd, insane, ridiculous thing. Because for them, when they want a house,
they build it.
They get together, build a house in the canopy for like, it takes a week to build the house. And then they climb up in the house and they're done. That's it. No mortgage, no payments. The whole thing seemed insane to them, you know, absolutely insane. So, yeah, man.
It's weird, dude. We are slaves to debt.
slaves to debt. We're slaves to a modern way of life. We can all feel it, but inside you can kind of feel it. Like for me, where it really hits, man, and I'm sure you remember this from your pot smoking days, but for me, where I really feel the heavy darkness of modern life is if I ever end up on the interstate in rush hour traffic, stoned.
Yeah.
That's where I start hearing the fucking death metal. Boy, nyang, nyang, nyang.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. When you're looking around.
And you're just and people you're forever.
Just stuck. And just stuck in this fucking quagmire of metal.
Yeah.
And you look in the cars, right? You ever do that where you look over at the people next to you in these little fucking bubbles? No one's acknowledging each other. Everyone thinks they have autonomy. Every single one of these people is like, I'm living my life. I'm different from the next Joe.
I'm doing what I was told to do.
Yeah, man. And you're stuck in that fucking quagmire. Right there, that place is where it really feels like, oh, I'm witnessing Kali, the goddess of death, decapitating all of life right now. I'm watching the dark devour all freedom here in this moment. There must be a better fucking way, man. But what is the way? That's where we're trapped.
I think it's always somewhere in the middle, right? I mean, like, it's just interesting because I do live a pretty free life. Now, my money success, you know, it's here and there for me. You know, sometimes I'm making good money, sometimes I'm not.
Right.
But man, I mean, we're blessed, dude. We haven't really worked a crippling job in a very long time.
That's correct.
You know, we haven't worked a job that sucks our souls, you know, and we're kind of outside of that. But then sometimes when you look, you know, here I'm going to compare myself to other people, but, you know, when you look at your friends who have the family, the wife and kids and all that stuff, you're like, oh, should I be doing that?
Right.
Should I be doing, because that's what everybody's doing.
Right.
Should I be doing that? And I think having a kid and finding love and marriage is a wonderful thing. But I think you should do it when you're ready to do it.
Right.
And not do it because you think you have to do it.
Oh, God, no.
It's the theory of, I was talking about this with, I can't remember his name right now, but about how so many people get off on the first exit on the highway. They always, oh, there's an exit. That's how I got to get off. And it's just like, nah, man, keep going.
Because
you never know when the right exit's coming.
Right.
You know, and sometimes I think, did I stay on the highway too long? But it just takes one thing. You know, the beauty of Los Angeles and why people, I'm convinced people stay in this town, is because you're always one day away from living your dreams. Something crazy happens and all of a sudden fortunes are completely changed. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Today compared to yesterday, two different feelings going on. So you stay in the moment, you know, and all that. We deal with the crap we deal with in this town because you're always one day away from living your dreams.
Right.
But then the opposite of that is taking the first exit off.
Right.
And you're like, you know, okay, now you're working this job making nothing because you just grabbed a job.
Right.
Instead of just going, what job do I want to grab?
Right.
It's a totally different thing.
Totally different thing. But this idea, again, what you're talking about there is that slot machine, like every day in Los Angeles is like pulling the arm of a slot machine. Let's see where it lines up every single day. Now you're the geriatric at the casino smoking Pall Malls, hoping the fucking stars line up, and then ding, 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 all this shit comes pouring out. But to me, the subversive beauty of the real spiritual teachings is that they all point to a place where you are, as you mentioned earlier, finding this astounding, infinite reservoir of peace that is no longer dependent on the external universe giving you anything at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter anymore. And that, to me, is really the thing that you will not hear from commercials, and you will not hear from the news, and you will not hear the president of a capitalist society give a speech like a State of the Union. You'll never hear any president that ever gets elected say to the world, you know, I just thought you all should know that you're all perfect, beautiful people.
Yeah.
And where you're at right now is exactly the right place
you're
to
doing be. Fine.
And the most important thing is love. And we haven't figured out a way to print that yet, and we can't base a currency on it, but You've been hypnotized by a lot of very intelligent people into being slaves, because really nothing's going to make you happy that isn't already there for you and is completely 100% free. You'll never hear that.
Yeah.
But even though that's the truth, you know who I got that from? This fucking guy when I went to buy charcoal today for my grill. I'm buying charcoal and the guy who works there, he's like, he really just like started spewing this stuff to me. He's like, you know, the problem with the people running for president right now is they secretly hate everybody. They don't think that we're beautiful, perfect, wonderful people, which every single person is. They hate us. And that's what they want us. That's what they want to teach us, is that they're people to be hated. And that's the great conspiracy, you know?
Oh, dude, commercials are all about making you feel like shit. So you buy their product to feel better about yourself. The manipulation in particular of women through television and movies is like, it's mental warfare, dude.
Right.
Like, you watch a commercial, I don't know how much television you watch, but you watch a commercial where the mom is literally like 3 years older than the kid.
Yes.
And you're like, why is that? What is going on here? And you're like, that is done on purpose.
Yes.
So that the mom watching at home goes, that kid looks as old as my kid, and look how much younger that mom looks to me. I'm aging horribly.
Fucked.
And I gotta buy this thing so I look like that mom.
That is so fucked.
Watch it. It happens all. Everything is a manipulation. You know, and that's the big problem right now is that people tend to project themselves into whatever they're talking about. Going, let's take a President George Bush, politically or not. The notion that was, let's say, 9/11, an inside job, or did he go in Iraq for the purpose of just making money? And people can't grasp the possibilities of that because they would never do it themselves. Right. So they're like, if I won't do that, there's no way George Bush won't do that because we're both people. And you're like, you're looking at a totally different thing. This guy's in it. You know, if you ever watched The First 48, which is this television show where people get murdered over $5.
Right.
$5. You're like, well, that's a bunch of crackheads. They live in the hood and they're fucked, blah, blah, blah. These guys are, you know, Ivy League, blah, blah, blah. We're all fucking cavemen with primal needs. Right. And our primal needs are to get as much of the resources as we can. And that's why they could do all that. You apply that to some, it's like, you see it a lot in murder cases where like a man and woman commit a crime, right? Guy goes to jail for life. Woman gets 10 years. Why is that? Because everybody projects their views of their wife, their daughter, their sisters, and that there's no way their wife, their daughter, their sister could do that unless she was manipulated by that man. So you project your views on that, and that's why it's very hard for people to convict people on just that maybe women can be just as evil as men can. And I'm not trying to get into like a women bash. That's not at all. But I'm saying we see a lot of projection.
Wait, is there a statistic for that women get?
I would tell you. I don't know the exact statistic, but I would tell you it's not even close. What guys get and what women get,
because you empathize more or something. That's what you're saying.
Like, yes,
you see it, you like,
you're projecting.
When you look at like the BTK killer, you know, you see this like grotesque, rugged serial. But you know, there is that what's her name? She was a serial killer and she got zapped. They did the movie about her.
Right, right. I'm not saying anything is 100%.
But I sure felt sorry for her. Like when I was watching that. When you watch that, but then, you know,
how about the woman in South Carolina who put her kids in a car and drove it into the lake and they spared her the death penalty, you know, because they can't comprehend that a woman would do that to her children. There has to be a manipulation being done to have her do that. They can't accept that there's evil. You know, it's like there's predestined thoughts and projections and prejudice that are, you know, thrown on people all the time. And that's kind of what the point of that is.
So the that's an interesting thing, man. That's something that when you realize what's happening with identity right now, and that we are getting to the point through technology where we're going to be able to manipulate our identities in like really profound ways, even more than we can now. Like right now, if you want to turn into a woman, you've got to go. There's like surgeries. There's hormone replacement. But theoretically, you're going to be able to turn into a woman and turn back into a man, you know, with some as of yet invented technology, which means that our identities, what we are, our ethnicity, our cultural identities, all of these things that have formerly been a kind of curse or a blessing or whatever you want to call it. When you're born, if you're white,
yeah,
you're going to stay white.
Right.
And if you're black, you're going to stay black. And if you're Mexican, you're going to stay Mexican. If you're a woman, you're probably going to stay a woman.
Right.
If you're a man, you're going to stay a man. And that there's a gulf between the reason people aren't switching these identities like they do in Grand Theft Auto with like choosing an avatar.
Right.
Is just because you have to like, if I wanted to turn black, well, I don't even know what I would do. There's some kind of chemical. I don't know how I can.
And I hope that day comes where you could change. I really do. You know, the notion of like cross-dressing and transsexuals, I'm like, why not? I mean, it doesn't affect me. And why can't they live how they want to? Why? You know, I sit there and go, common sense says, why can't they dress like that? Because we've been indoctrined that you dress like this. If you have this kind of genitalia, you dress like this. But why?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's some kind of it really is some kind of it's all cultural conditioning.
It is.
But and the end result of the thing is that we start looking at there's what's called gender bias. So what you're talking about is some kind of gender bias, a theoretical gender bias. I don't know if there's statistics to back it up, but the idea is that a woman on trial is going to be treated differently than a man on trial and theoretically is going to receive a less severe penalty because people from your POV are projecting their own ideas of the vulnerability of a woman versus the vulnerability of a man.
Yes.
But as our identities begin to blend and merge with each other, those projections are going to become, they're going to happen less because you're going to start seeing every single person as having chosen that identity. In other words, if I look at if there is some easy way, which it doesn't exist yet, but if there's some easy way to like take some form of, they're working on this thing. It's called CRISPR. Have you heard of this?
No.
Where like it uses viruses or bacteria to transform the to like get into your DNA and change it. So like theoretically in the future they invent some kind of, you can go to a doctor and say, listen, I've done the white male thing for 41 years and I'm thinking I want to see what it's like to be a Hispanic 23-year-old woman with medium-sized breasts, blue eyes, and he's like, all right, no problem. Here, let me show you some prototypes that we have. Brings up like what he can transform you into onto a computer, gives you some injection, a series of treatments, and within a day or two, bam, you're a brand new being. Now, when we start looking out at people in the world, we aren't thinking, that's a black man, that's a white man. We're thinking, oh, he's choosing to be that black man. Oh, she's choosing to be a man or he's choosing to be a woman. There's no more he or she anymore. It's now just a decision.
Yeah.
It's now just a decision. It's
your choices.
It's a choice. So that's going to create such incredible upheaval when you consider what that's going to do socially, because there's no more like if a man is turned into a woman genetically, right now there's a surgery that happens, you know, but if a man is like somehow transformed through nanotech or something into a woman, now we have a woman.
Yeah.
Even though but this is where you start getting, you know, a lot of people, they get really upset when they talk about this kind of thing. Because like right now, if a man decides to change gender, there's a lot of stigma attached to that still.
There's a lot.
And that is...
I feel very bad for them because there's not a lot of jobs for transgenders people. I mean, you really think about it. There's not a lot of jobs out there. You know what the jobs are? Prostitution. And it's like, that's why they end up being very big drug addicts and they end up getting into dangerous lifestyles, man, because there's not a lot of outlets for them to make money if they want to live the way they want to live.
Well, I mean, that's and that the problem there is a problem of a lack of technological advancement when it comes to these kinds of procedures. And that's the problem, because ideally we would have the necessary technology, the medical technology to do these kinds of conversions with zero indication that this person had ever been another gender. And it stinks because the, you know, people right now, they still, a lot of people, when they hear about this shit, they're like, those people are freaks. Yeah. Those people are sick.
It's
those
so
people
weird,
are
man.
Psychotic. Well, especially when you consider the fact that this is supposed to be the land of the free.
Yeah.
And what
so
is
weird.
More freeing than deciding your gender, deciding what you look like, deciding what your ethnicity is, deciding these things. We are talking about the one of the final genetic manacles that hold people in a lifestyle that maybe they don't want. It's like, oh, cool. So you're right now, nature does a kind of genetic roulette and rolls the dice, and you don't get to pick your avatar that you represent yourself with here in this dimension.
Right.
And so if you're born with the genetics of somebody who doesn't have a symmetrical face, if you're born with the genetics of somebody whose hair falls out too soon or
right.
whatever, then you are going to experience all of these incredible social impediments that have nothing to do with your true spirit and everything to do with people's preconceived notions of what it means if you run into someone who is asymmetrical 100%. Or symmetrical. So the moment we eliminate that, oh my God, it's such a beautiful era to me when I think about that. The
yeah.
beauty of being able to completely
to
pick
yeah.
your identity and how that's going to transform.
Everybody's pretty.
Or you know, and once that happens, being pretty will just seem like nothing anymore instead of like how special it seems now. If you're...
In a weird way, I've been trying to talk about this on stage about how like there's no such thing as weird because everybody's weird. Like, there's no such thing as kinky and perverted because everybody has a little dark secret of something that they're into. And the problem is we allow the bullshit artists, the liars, to shame us for us being us. And even though secretly they're being us too. They're being their thing too. And I talked about this on my podcast today. It's like hypocrisy should be a misdemeanor. There should be a ticket and a fucking... some weird kind of penalty for being hypocritical, dude, for calling out other people, for being a Republican who clashes against gay people and then turns out you're blowing truckers on the fucking highway. You know,
yeah.
there should be some kind of penalty for that. You know, it's like, oh, I'm anti-drug, but I just got busted with a ton of cocaine.
Oh, there is a penalty. There's already a penalty.
What is it?
Have you ever heard one of my favorite verses from the Bible is, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." You know, which is like, don't worry about taking vengeance.
Karma.
Don't worry about taking vengeance yourself. I'll handle it.
It does work
and
out.
No, here's how it works out. When you are someone who is putting out some kind of squeaky clean persona, whatever it may be, generally this comes in the form of some kind of televangelist who's often homophobic and goes in front of people and talks about how vile sodomy is and tries to do everything he can to shame and humiliate gay people. This is how it usually happens. And then, of course, inevitably, they find him in a fucking hotel room snorting crystal meth off a fucking gay prostitute's asshole. Who he's just been fucking and fucking all weekend long, doing crystal meth, sweating of evangelical demon sweat onto the fucking abdominal muscles of this dude. He's been fucking probably under his breath muttering Bible verses. Oh, and the Lord said on the third day, ah! Just, you know what I mean? That's his outlet, right? But so what's happening to that person and to all of those great hypocrites out there who are professing to be this way or that way and aren't at least attempting to come clean with the fact that they are fallible, as all humans are, is that inside of them, there is an awful disconnect. I like to think of it in terms of, have you ever seen those videos of the brick thrown in the dryer? And it's awesome. They're all over YouTube. But if you throw a brick into a dryer, then it destroys the dryer.
Because
the brick is like, bam, 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 bam. bam, like knocking around, and the dryer starts shaking. It falls apart, and it's a really sad thing because a lot of dryers are anthropomorphic, and it looks like a being, a really sad being. That's,
yeah.
You could see the dials look like its eyes, and it seems to be saying, like, what have you done to me?
Yeah.
No, stop. And it gets ripped to shreds. So a person who is not accurately representing their internal universe to the world, that lack of representation, that dishonesty, and we've all got a little bit inside of us. We've all in some way fabricated some version of ourselves. That creates a kind of dissonance. And depending on how dramatic and radical the lies that you've been telling the world are, that will determine how you're getting ripped apart on the inside, which is why the Catholic Church came up with this brilliant concept of confession, which is like you go and you tell some guy, listen, man, I just want you to know sometimes on the weekend I go down to this massage parlor and I get two of the massage girls to jerk me off while I suck on their feet. And then just saying that, you know, just saying that,
it
purges you in such a, anybody out there listening, if you've got some kind of awful secret
that's a big part of recovery.
Telling
you
the secret.
Admit your darkest secrets to another human being.
Oh, it's such a, I mean, and this is on this podcast, I've certainly like admitted many, many of my secrets. And every time I do that, instead of the result being some kind of like awful backlash, more often than not, it's like people a million times weirder, kinkier than me writing me and being like, really? You think that's...
In recovery, when you meet with somebody, you tell them your darkest secrets. Usually the two coolest words you'll ever hear happen, and that is, me too.
Yes.
You know, and it's very refreshing. You hear a lot within the rooms. They talk about, like, I told my sponsor I did this, and he one-upped me. You know, it's like you're not alone. The problem is, it's like it's just this public shaming goes on. Like even TMZ, to a point, which is owned and ran by a gay man. There's so much like bullying going on. You allow these people to like bully people through blackmail and shit like that. Right. You just see it happen all the time. And that's why nobody wants to talk about it. It's like, everybody's weird, man.
Yeah.
Everybody has something. We've gotten to the point where the need to just mate to survive is gone. There's yes. enough of us on the planet.
Yes.
Let's encourage people to do shit that doesn't make more of us.
Yes.
Fuck a pumpkin. Get, you know? Like, be weird, dude. Enjoy the weird shit. You know, go out there, get weird. Life should be like Baskin Robbins. You should stick your dick in all 34 flavors.
Dude, if you were running for president, I would vote for you just
on
that.
I just think that's the truth, dude. Get weird.
Well, I think you're right. And I think that it's not just get weird sexually. It's like, let yourself swim past those fucking boundaries, man. Get out there. And also, don't get eaten up with guilt because you feel like you've done some awful thing in your life. Here's the reality, man. We have been propelled out of a vagina into a world where our spacesuit happens to be the most advanced biocomputer on the planet. The amount of information that we are processing right now is orders of magnitude higher than any computer operating on the planet today. Right now, a typical computer has the processing power of one mouse brain. So the most advanced computer that's simulating, you know, I suppose like an IBM supercomputer, who knows, maybe it's a little bit more than that. But here you are, a thing with no real identity, blasted into a dimension where you are processing more information than any computer on the planet today. You have no real identity. You have no real self. You know, this is the concept that existence precedes essence. This is the idea that there is no essential way a human is supposed to be. There's no right way a human is supposed to be. There's no, here's the way it works. Like, there is a right way that a broom is supposed to be.
Right.
In general, a broom, we know what it's like. There, you can innovate new broom technologies, but mostly we know how
brooms
are brooms. Human, blank slate, a primary bit of sentience, a primary bit of self-awareness that is forced into a playground where everyone is completely committed to playing characters that they have either decided to play or have been terrified into playing these characters. And so, and they're fully committed to this role. It's like a game of make-believe that never ends. And so, that is a very precarious, uncomfortable, and painful situation for something that is so advanced in its ability to process information to be blasted into, which means that if at some point in your life you've done this thing or that thing that doesn't go with the social norms, whatever it may be, you let someone piss in your mouth, or you, I don't know, you shot a fucking bird with a BB gun, or you fucking shot a bird with a BB gun while someone was pissing in your mouth, and you filmed it and you sold it, or whatever the fucking thing you did, whatever the thing you did that you think is so awful and horrific that when you wake up in the morning and you feel like, God, what's wrong with me? Am I out of my mind? Whatever the thing is, and these examples that I just gave, I'm sure they're nothing compared to what some people think that they have done that is so awful. But here's the fucking reality, man. How are you supposed to function in a world like this where you don't do things like that from time to time? Are you kidding?
Right.
How wouldn't you do shit like that? How wouldn't you swerve off the roads that have been painted for us by people who only want to manipulate and control us because they want our fucking money?
Yep.
The fact that you swerved off the road and went into the dark forest of whatever it may be, quote, sexual depravity, while lying, stealing, whatever the great blasphemy is that you did, that was you learning about this dimension that we're in. And how are you going to learn about this dimension that we're in if you don't fucking swim past the goddamn boundaries that have been painted for us by terrified people?
So you
got to forgive yourself, you know? And me too is exactly, listen, we live on a planet with billions and billions and billions of us on this planet.
Yeah.
And no matter what it is that you've done, guaranteed, huge swaths of the human population have done that identical.
Chat rooms let you know you're not alone.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. This is the, you know, this is actually, Sam, one of my favorite meditations at these meditation retreats that I go to. They do this thing. I'm not going to say favorite. Actually, usually the last time it happened, I walked out because I have such a problem doing this shit. But the first time I did it, it was really intense. What you do is you sit across from someone and there's this thing that you say, right? You look into someone's eyes. And you say, and I can't remember because I don't have it memorized, but you say something along the lines of, just like me, you have felt loss. Just like me, you have felt lonely. Just like me, you have felt scared. Just like me, you have had your heart broken. Just like me. You say these things to a person, and when you have a person telling you that, saying it to you, it just opens you up because you're like, oh my God, you're right. Every single one of us here in this dimension that we are in have all experienced similar levels of suffering, sadness, pain, grief, loss, love, winning.
Wins and losses. Yes.
Pleasure and pain.
Pain, yeah. It is, man. You're not alone. You know what? You learn in the rooms is you're not that unique.
Yeah.
You're not that unique. You didn't invent anything kinky, devious, debaucherous, diabolical, you know? It's weird, you know? It's like almost, do you remember in The Matrix where he meets the engineer? And the engineer is like, oh, you're a little different than the rest. And he's like, well, he's like, oh, you're the seventh one. You know, it's like in this weird way, we're all in this cycle that, and we all kind of have the same wiring and we almost react the same way to different stuff. So it's like, whatever is the weird thing you think you're doing that you're the only one doing, just know you're not.
And what a burden to what an easy burden to set down. Or the other version of it is if you think that you're, if you're allowing yourself to be over-pressured by your success, which happens to a lot of people, or you think that your success is somehow special, there's a fantastic story. Have you ever heard the story of Indra, the king of heaven, like meeting Vishnu? Have you ever heard this story?
No.
So it's like in Hindu mythology, but like Indra is like this, like kind of like, he's so they call him like the king of heaven, but he's like, I don't know what he represents. I'm not going to pretend to know what he represents. But as the story goes, Indra has built this incredible cosmic palace that is like so amazing and so gigantic that all of the gods are coming to see it because they're just blown away by this amazing celestial palace that he's made, like 5,000 times bigger than the sun, filled with incredible wonders inside of it. It's just the most incredible thing. And so all the gods are coming to witness this. And Vishnu in Hindu mythology represents the present moment and is the thing that will come to bring balance when things have gotten out of balance in the world. It's all obviously a metaphor. It's like, if your life is out of balance, a surefire way to get balanced again is to just get in the present moment and forget about the future and the past.
Meditation.
And you're fine immediately. You're fine. That's Vishnu. So Vishnu goes to visit Indra's palace, and Indra's giving him this tour, and he's very proud, and his head's gotten very big, because now here's Vishnu, the creator for the representation of the present moment. So he's showing him on the massive fountains and the beautiful zoo and the celestial, I don't know, like peacocks with sun eyes or whatever. And finally, he gets to where his throne is. It's the most beautiful throne ever. And Vishnu is like, wow, Indra, I have to tell you that this palace is the most beautiful palace that any of the Indras ever made. And he's like, wait, what do you mean, any of the Indras? What do you mean? And he points to a line of ants on the floor. And he says, oh, all of these ants, they were Indra once. You know, it's the idea is like, you no matter what you have done, you are in a universe that is infinitely dying and being reborn.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter. You've been here so long. You've been here so long that if you think in this life, this little life, this little momentary flicker, where you have you have a social security number and a name, and you're in this insane modern society, if you think you're gonna pull off some perfect legendary thing, forget it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Give yourself a fucking break.
Yeah. It's just, you remember there was this, I think it was a movie or a script or a story about how a guy tried to, he got the DNA of Shakespeare and he tried to basically recreate Shakespeare, and he got the DNA and he had this kid born and it was like, you're going to write all these new Shakespearean plays. And he ended up writing the same plays.
Wow, cool. Like it was already built into him to do it. Right.
Yeah, it's you're not that unique. And so, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's like, you know, sometimes it come off as like, you know, big thing I learned in recovery was that everybody wasn't thinking of me all the time.
Right.
I think a big problem I had back in the day is I thought I was the center of the universe.
Yeah, right.
And then a very freeing thing happened. I learned nobody gives a shit.
No one.
And everybody's just white knuckling it the best that they can. And to survive. And nobody's thinking of me 24/7.
That's right. I mean, to put in perspective, let's think of someone in the world. Just bring to mind anyone in the world who actually has an impact on your life. You know, like somebody like Putin or Obama or like one of the great world leaders. What I mean is like, how often does your mind, right now you can do this experiment to back up what Sam's saying. Right now, allow yourself to think, you know, to put it into perspective, right now bring to mind the biggest asshole in your life, right? Whoever it may be, the biggest fuck up, the person who's doing the stupidest shit all the time that you know. And then think, how often do I think about this person? How often? And you probably don't think about them at all. Maybe like once every few days, but the way you think about them is like, a flickering moment, like remembering a dream or something. Like they'll come to your mind as a kind of like translucent bit of nothingness that immediately goes away. And that's the biggest asshole in your life.
Yeah.
Therefore, since you're not the biggest asshole in other people's lives, probably, how much do you think they're thinking about you?
Not at all.
Not at all.
And it was when I learned that, man, it was such a freeing moment.
What a relief.
100%.
What a relief. You're finally, you get to experience like a feeling of like being anonymous, you know, in the mind.
There's no shadow group out there trying to hold you back.
No.
That when you list all the problems you have with people and all these people, the common denominator tends to be you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you realize that you are causing a lot of your own problems. I'm not saying that bad things don't happen to good people. You know, it does happen. And sometimes good things happen to bad people. But at the end of the day, you have a little more say in what's going on in your life than sometimes you want to give credit to. Nobody's trying to hold you back from your happiness. Usually it has to. And there are personality conflicts here and there. You know, maybe some industry guy isn't the biggest fan of your comedy.
Yeah.
That does happen. But for the most part, you know, if you work right, work hard, treat people well, good things will happen for you.
That's it, man. And you got to, like, you have to release the burden of being the center of everybody else's universe, man.
Dude, it's
that's
so
too much work.
Yeah. When I was young, man, I talked about this on another podcast, but it's just the truth. It's like, you know, I love my dad to death, but he gave me some weird advice. Was like, you know, as a kid, it's just like, you know, if people disrespect you, you fucking make them pay. And it was just like, what a horrible fucking set of advice to tell fucking people.
Right.
Basically, my I handled shit like Kaiser Sose, you know, from fucking
yeah.
Usual Suspects, which was, oh, you fuck with me? Shoot the family, burn the village down.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a horrible way to deal with stuff. The best thing I ever heard is like when you think somebody is fucking with you, the truth of the matter is has nothing to do with you, has everything to do with them. And they're just trying to do their best to get through a situation.
They don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
I mean, when you consider that the human brain is like this super advanced simulator, and when you think about another person, like whoever it is, like right now, everyone, just bring to mind Donald Trump in your mind. What's really happened is that your mind has simulated Donald Trump. That's not the real Donald Trump in your mind. It's the maybe you see his face, maybe you see his mannerisms or things that he's said, or you see him at a podium or something. But clearly, this is not Donald Trump. This is your mind approximating, creating an avatar that
right.
looks like Donald Trump, and then imbuing it with a personality
yeah.
that has nothing to do with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's just some. It's a puppet that your mind has created.
Yeah.
That it's like a mental finger puppet.
It's the prism in which you look through life.
That's it. So in the same way, if somebody's treating you like shit or doesn't like you or is being weird to you, they don't even know you. It's just the simulated version of you in their mind that
yes.
they've created doesn't work well with
right.
them. Another way to put it that Ram Dass says, which I really like, is that if you're not getting along with somebody, or if you've got whatever, static with somebody, or you just aren't meshing with someone, all this means is that it's not that your karma isn't interacting well with that person's karma. But the thing behind it, the universal consciousness that we all are, it's getting along just fine.
Yeah.
You guys are doing great.
Yeah.
So the next time you get around somebody who really fucking bothers you, if you just recognize like, oh, it's the mask that we're wearing that doesn't fit. But the thing behind the mask, we both love each other.
I was talking about this on Bird Crusher's podcast about how like I love becoming friends with people who scare me, meaning not so much like in violence, obviously. You don't want to be someone like that guy could murder somebody. You don't want, but like in terms of like comedy or something, like someone you see just go up and just flamethrow the room and you're like, oh man, a gun recognizes a gun, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, and the tendency is to be like, fuck that, I'm funnier, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, or you could be like, I got to get to know this guy because he makes me nervous
right.
How funny he fucking is.
Yeah.
And I'd rather have this guy in my life than fucking make some stupid ass kind of thing going on in my head, you know,
yeah.
which is like way back in the day. It was like, you know, I used to be a competitive guy.
Right.
And then I'm like, why do that, man? Why not enjoy people who master the art in which you try to make
yeah.
a living from?
Well, look at Genghis Khan, man. This is he conquered more landmass, and he and his descendants, than any other world leader. And if I'm wrong about that, I'm sorry. I just read a book on him, but it does seem to indicate that. But his technique was, when he conquered a place, what he would do is, instead of killing everybody, he would take the greatest artists, the greatest philosophers, the greatest astrologers, the greatest whoever it may be, the greatest engineers, and he would give them really fantastic jobs in his kingdom. And because of that, he had the most advanced siege mechanisms. He had the most advanced strategies. He had the most advanced buildings. Everything was the most advanced because instead of ostracizing or seeing, oh, that's a threat, let's kill him, he's like, oh, let's, yes, come, join.
Yeah,
join.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's
kill him with kindness.
Yeah, the idea is like unify, merge. Don't let some weird temporary static between you and some person that you don't know get in the way of forming some kind of connection with them. That's one of my favorite things in life, man, is when, I'll tell you, oh my God, this is fantastic. I watched this really dumb movie with Vin Diesel called, it's out now.
Everything Vin Diesel's done?
It's called The Last Witch Hunter.
Okay.
Oh, God. And so, like, I'm riding with Cora, my girlfriend, and I start making fun of Vin Diesel. Like an asshole. I don't know anything about Vin Diesel. I don't know anything about him at all. I just saw this character he played in this stupid movie. So I'm saying, like, really kind of crass shit about this Vin Diesel. Really, you know, whatever. It's, I'm sure I'm not the first person to do that, but ultimately, it's not that cool. I don't know who the guy is, and why am I putting negative energy out there? And so Cora's like, well, why don't we Wikipedia him and see what he's like? And she Wikipedia's Vin Diesel, and you know what that guy likes to do? He likes to play Dungeons and Dragons. Vin Diesel has tattooed on his stomach his character's name from Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, my God.
And also, he named his daughter after that guy who died in The Fast and the Furious. And Paul Walker.
Yeah.
He named his daughter Paulina. But then suddenly you realize, oh, man, this is the coolest. This guy's like 80 times cooler than you.
Yeah.
Like 80 to a million times cooler. Not only did he like love his coworker so much, he named his daughter after him. He tattooed his fucking D&D character on his stomach.
Yeah.
And so just the fact that my simulator had done is he had done a very shitty copy of Vin Diesel and it imbued it with the exact wrong personality based on nothing at all.
Yep.
And because of that, even though I'll never meet Vin Diesel, you never know, but because of that, my universe consisted of somebody who was opposed to me in some tiny little way. And that part of the ultimate simulation was fragmented, like a fragmented hard drive.
Yep.
And the moment I looked into it a little bit, now existing in my pantheon of people who I'll probably never meet is one really fucking cool Vin Diesel. And the more that you do that, the more that your universe starts becoming so much more interesting and beautiful.
Dude, it's like looking through the world, it's reprogramming your, it's basically what happens is at any given time, there's 1,000 things going on. What you choose to focus on is through, it's the prism which you look on. And, you know, within one thing, there's 1,000,000 things going on. If you choose to focus on the negative thing, that's how you see it. Why, at the same time, there's something, the same thing, you could see it as going on positive.
Right.
So if you, it's really about reprogramming your brain to stop looking at negative shit and look at everything as negative and start programming it positive. And when you put out more positive energy, better things happen.
Instantly.
You know, it's like I learned this the hard way, you know, within Hollywood was like, yeah, there's a lot of crazy shit going on. But you know what people don't want? The guy who's telling everybody the crazy ish. I call it like the comedy sheriff. Nobody wants the sheriff of comedy.
Right.
Come telling it, oh, that's blah, blah, blah joke. That's hacky. That's fun. But if you can apply that to anything. People would rather work with someone who's maybe a little less talented, but easy to hang out with, than work with the most talented guy who's shit-talking everything and is constantly a diva. Nobody wants that.
No one.
Everybody just wants to earn a dollar, you know, bang a nice pretty girl, earn a fucking dollar, and have a little food in their stomach. And everybody just wants to do that the easiest way possible. They don't want to have to be doing with the guy who's always fucking telling him what's wrong with the world.
Right.
And the more positive energy you put out, the more people want to work with you.
Right.
You know? And it's just like, it took me a while to learn that. But I got that.
But what a great thing to learn. And once you learn it, it's like everything else, to me, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, once you start reprogramming whatever simulation that you're currently running that you've confused with reality and start trying to bring more advanced, sophisticated and accurate simulations of your external universe into your mind instead of your superstitious, non-empirical, fear-based operating system that you're running the simulation that you call reality on, then yeah, man, it doesn't really matter if like the money starts pouring in or doesn't, because you've you already have unburdened yourself from the misery of running a shitty operating system. It's like, man, what's more magical than when your phone does an update and works 10 times better?
Yeah.
It's cool. You plug the thing in at night, and the morning you wake up, and it's like, holy shit, Siri's gotten better. This thing's incredible. In the same way, it's very likely if you are miserable most of the time, or if you have behavior patterns that aren't allowing yourself to experience happiness or the kind of peace that you're talking about, you just need an operating system update.
Yeah.
And that's it. And which is why the rooms, as you call them, I think that's fantastic, a fantastic way if you're someone who has an addictive personality to start getting operating system upgrades, because that's what's happening in those rooms. It seems like you're getting a new operating system downloaded into your super addictive operating system.
Yeah.
But sucks, man, because you got to be a fucking addict to go to those things, huh?
No, not really. I think some people might not be the addict. Some people are just lonely, want to connect, you know?
And that's okay.
I think it's fine, dude. I love going to meetings, man. They're like my social hour.
So you're saying if somebody out there is listening and like, shit, man, this philosophy sounds really cool, but I have no drug or alcohol addictions.
Yeah.
It's cool for them to go to an AA meeting?
Yeah, why not?
Because they're not an alcoholic.
They don't have to. Sometimes you just need to connect with people.
That's really cool. That's trippy to think about that.
Some people just need to connect, man. You need to get in the middle of the herd. You know, a lot of people always want to it goes back to how we started this podcast with, outsiders.
Yeah.
Get in the middle, man. Right. Safer.
And those rooms are like collections of outsiders who've all joined together.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, Sam. You are so cool, man. Every time we have these chats, I really like get invigorated.
I love you to death, Duncan Trussell. I'm sorry that my phone kept ringing. My girlfriend has. You know, I've done a lot of scumbag shit. I hate saying it, but, you know, I've earned the right to her being like, my phone has been buzzing,
man.
So I apologize for that. My girlfriend's like, where are you? Where are you?
It's
where
okay.
are you? Where
it's
are you?
I get it.
You
it's
know,
fine.
So, and I've earned that. You know, it's like I'm the guy, if you don't hear me from 2 hours, you think I'm fucking in jail. I wanted to apologize
for
that.
Yeah, I get it. Don't even apologize, Sam. Thank you for coming all the way out here and doing this show.
Great. Can I just push two shows real quick?
Please, yes.
I'm very excited. I'm going to be playing the Duck Room at Blueberry Hill in St. Louis this Saturday. And then the following week, I'm recording my CD I'm going to do something interesting. I'm going to record a CD while I try to get my hour special made. So in case the hour special maybe doesn't, I can just put out the material.
That's really smart.
I'm going to record. I'm doing the Sacramento Punchline, not this weekend, but the following weekend, February 18th, 19th, and 20th. And come out and have a great time. Then at the end of February, I'm at the awesome La Jolla Comedy Store.
I will have all of those links where you can go see Sam live. And if you haven't seen him live, you got to go. He is amazing. So worth going out to see him. It's pure stand-up comedy. It's the real thing, man. Which if you've never... So a lot of people have never seen live comedy.
I find that so crazy. Like a 35-year-old be like, this is my first comedy show. I'm like, what? What? How's that possible?
Here's the thing. If you think that what you've seen on comedy specials is what live comedy is, that is not live comedy. It's great. It's funny. But until you've seen the feeling in a room... When somebody who has been doing stand-up comedy long enough to become an expert at it, when you feel that energy, which happens when you're on stage, Sam, that crazy shift that happens, I don't know what it is, but it's a shift. It's a beautiful experience.
It's better than the best sex in the world. And I hate bringing everything back to sex, but like people always ask, it's like, no, dude, I've had some crazy shit. But like when you walk into a room of like, it's great playing your fans, but there's also something really amazing about just going into a room of where nobody knows you and just flame throwing that stuff. And it's just like, it's such a high. And that's, you know, why a lot of comics end up getting into the drug and alcohol thing is because
I've never heard that before. Do comics get into drugs?
No, none. None. That, maybe prop
comics.
So weird.
Yeah, prop comics. That I've heard.
Yeah.
Tripoli, I love you, man.
I love you, Duncan.
All those links will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Go see Sam live. And thanks a lot, man.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Sam Tripoli. You can find out more about Sam at samtripoli.com. And a big thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode and my tour. You can go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. Thank you guys for listening. And if you like this podcast, give us a nice rating on iTunes, won't you? Have an incredible weekend, an amazing week, a beautiful life. The universe never started. It will never end. And you are perfect. I'll see you guys soon. Hare Krishna.